Jeff and I have had a lot of discussions on the air about artificial intelligence and opinions thereof, but the fact is artificial intelligence is no longer a thing of science fiction, but we tend to get our information from mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And so we're hearing about hype and speculation and often fear-mongering from people who haven't themselves been contributors to the technology. Our guest this week wants to change that with his new book, Architects of Intelligence, where he's recorded in-depth interviews with the very people shaping the future of AI. He's the New York Times best-selling author of Rise of the Robots. Please help me welcome futurist Martin Ford. Martin, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Martin, why another book about AI?
Well, what I really wanted to do with this book is get inside the minds of the people that are really building this technology, the people that really, in the whole world, know the most about artificial intelligence. They're literally, in many cases, the people that have been responsible for some of the breakthroughs that have really brought us to this point where everyone is talking about AI because it's become so disruptive. So I think that's the best way to kind of cut through, as you said, the speculation mm-hmm. and the hype and really find out what's really going on. And that's sort of my purpose with this book.
Very good. And I love the way it reads. It is written very much as an interview. So, you know, if you're daunted by a big, thick book, Architects of Intelligence from Martin Ford, it's written like an interview, and you're able to kind of get into the minds of those who are involved in the development of AI. Martin, how will AI evolve, and what major innovations are on the horizon?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. No one really knows the answer to that. And that's one of the main takeaways from the book is that I talked to 23 of the people in the world that know the most about this, and yet they really don't agree on a lot of this stuff. You know, they have different opinions, different ideas. So one of the main takeaways is that it's going to be unpredictable. I mean, everyone agrees that it's going to be very disruptive, that it's going to be a game changer for the economy, for society, but we don't really know exactly what innovations are going to occur first. We don't know, for example, what industries are going to be transformed first. We don't know exactly what the breakthroughs are going to be. Having said that, the primary technology that's really driving things right now is what's called deep learning or deep neural networks, which is basically building software in a way that kind of roughly emulates the way your brain works, you know, in terms of the way the neurons are connected. And that's the technology that's really just been transformative over maybe the last 6-7 years. We've seen incredible breakthroughs. We've got systems that, of course, are used in self-driving cars now. They're getting pretty close to really working. Mm-hmm. We've got systems used in medicine that can look at a medical image and actually be better than a human doctor in some cases at determining is there cancer in that image. We've got systems that are translating languages, even in real time. So it's just stuff that really just a few years ago was science fiction is now happening. So we can expect that over the next years and decades, that technology is going to get a lot better. It's going to evolve, become much more powerful, and that's going to continue to drive the disruption. And then further out, there are some real breakthroughs on the road toward what we would call true human-level intelligence, which is really kind of the holy grail of this whole field, you know, building a machine that can think at the level of a human being. But that's kind of a long path, and there are a lot of breakthroughs that need to occur before we get there.
Right.
And a lot of my discussions in this book are about what exactly are those breakthroughs, when might they occur, what does that path look like, and how long will it take us to get the human level AI? That's one of the most fascinating questions, you know, that's really central to this field.
Martin, we hear a lot of terms AI and now deep learning. What's the actual relationship between deep learning and AI?
Well, AI is the broadest term. Artificial intelligence really means essentially building technology, building machines or algorithms that, in some sense, think or take on cognitive capability, that can solve problems and learn in the same way that people can. One facet of that, one area of that is machine learning, which is specifically building algorithms that can look at data and can learn. And right now, those terms are used kind of interchangeably, but what we're seeing right now is really machine learning. It's algorithms that look at sometimes massive amounts of data mm-hmm. and can learn to do amazing things from that. For example, looking at a medical image and determining is there cancer there or not. And that is really the disruptive technology. But there, in the future, it will become even broader and will incorporate things like genuine reasoning and so forth. But right now, it's primarily a focus on machine learning.
Yeah, and that makes me think, are we going to see machine learning and deep learning continue to dominate, or are we going to have other approaches that are coming to the forefront?
Right. So before the current boom in deep learning, if you go back, more than 10 years, 15 years, there were other areas of AI that were much more prominent that we really focused on. And this involved, for example, what was called symbolic reasoning, the ability of mm-hmm. computers to make decisions and to reason in human-like ways. This is where the main thrust was, although people didn't have a huge amount of success with that. There was also expert systems, which are the kind of systems, for example, that do step-by-step thinking and analysis. That's the kind of system you would basically find in a jet airplane, which can fly itself, right? There was once a time when all of this stuff that we now consider to be kind of routine was considered to be artificial intelligence. The current boom is in machine learning and in algorithms that can learn, but many people think that in the future we'll need to bring back some of those earlier ideas into the picture in order to build more generalized, powerful intelligence. And that's one of the main ideas in the book. There's one group of people that believe strongly that deep learning is not going to be enough to take us forward to the next level, that we're going to have to bring back some of these more traditional ideas.
Right.
But then there are a bunch of people that I talk to that are really deep learning enthusiasts. They really believe in this technology, and that includes people like, for example, Geoffrey Hinton, who's very famous within the AI community for having been probably the single guy that's most responsible for bringing forth this deep learning revolution. He really invented a lot of the technology there. And they believe that deep learning will get better. There will be, it become more general. It will have new capabilities. There will be breakthroughs that will occur within the context of deep learning or neural networks, and that will take us forward. So it's really interesting to talk to these different people about their views of the technology and how it might progress. But again, one of the main takeaways is that they really don't agree. There's something of a debate between these two camps. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, I think, most interesting aspects of it.
Cool. And it's very much stepping stones, I think, and we're at that point where it's leaps and bounds. Jeff, I'm thinking about deep learning, and as you're mentioning, Martin, how this technology is able to think along the same kind of way of a human in a way. So, I have to ask the question that all of us Trekkies are thinking, I'm sure, at this moment. What does it look like as far as the path toward human-level artificial general intelligence? How far off are we, really, from Lieutenant Data being able to operate our business?
Right.
That's the biggest question in artificial intelligence, and it goes back right to the beginning when Alan Turing in 1950 wrote a famous paper, and he asked, "Can a machine think?" And that's where he invented the Turing test, right? Which many people have heard of as kind of the test for true intelligence. If a machine can carry out a conversation like a person, then we consider it to be intelligent. That's one test. And that goes all the way back to right to the beginning, and yet we still don't really know the answer to the question of how far off it is. And it's a big part of the book. I talk to everyone about that, but the opinions really vary. I talked to Ray Kurzweil, who's a very famous futurist that many people have heard of. He's the guy that is most associated with the idea of the singularity. He thinks it's only 10 years off. 2029 is the year he thinks that we will have human-level artificial intelligence. And that's a very, very aggressive prediction. I personally think that's way too optimistic.
Is that an aggressive prediction to try to push the industry, or is this a realistic approximation?
That's his view. He's at Google working on these technologies, right? He's now before he was a guy that kind of wrote books and talked about this a lot, and an inventor, but now he actually, for the last few years, has worked at Google, and he's actually working on this. So, and in the interview I did with him, it's clear that he knows what he's talking about in terms of the details of, the technology he's working on. So you have to give that some credence, right? But then other people I talked to, and one example would be Rodney Brooks, who is the founder of iRobot Corporation. He's one of the most famous robotics experts in the world. He thinks it could be 180 years in the future. So that's a pretty good range, right?
Oh, wow.
Is it 10 years in the future or 180 years in the future? I mean, 180 years, you're really getting into the Star Trek era, right? That's I think when Star Trek was actually set, right? A couple hundred years in the future. So, I mean, that's the range of opinion. I asked everyone about this. I actually took an average, and the average turned out to be about 80 years. So,
okay,
just at the end of this century. So, I think most of us would be quite lucky to still be alive if it's really 80 years from now. So, that's what we're talking about. It's very unpredictable. 80 years is about the average, but there certainly are a number of people that are much more aggressive, not just Ray, but others think it might be 20 to 50 years, somewhere in that time frame.
Okay.
But others think it's hundreds of years away. So that really gives you a good sense of just how hard this problem is and how little we know about it, how little we know about what it is really going to take to get to the point where we can build human-level intelligence and how fast those breakthroughs can occur. So
I would expect
it's a very open question.
Yeah, and I would expect that is the key word. It's breakthrough, because at one point, that breakthrough is going to happen that's just all of a sudden going to accelerate things. You can read all about the discussion that we're having, basically learn about these discussions that Martin has had with these professionals in the AI industry by reading Architects of Intelligence. Jeff, do you mind throwing to a commercial break? We've just got to take a really quick break here.
Yeah. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Martin Ford about the dangers associated with AI. So you're going to want to stick around.
Whether you shop on ThinkGeek, GearBest, B&H Photo Video, eBay, or Amazon, or even if you want a free trial of Audible, you'll find the best deals and support the shows we produce by simply visiting the shopping sites you already frequent by using the links on our website. Visit category5.tv/partners for the full and ever-growing list and help us create more free content like this show. Thank you for shopping with our partners, and thank you for watching.
And we're back. We are talking to Martin Ford about his, he's a best-selling author, and we're talking to him about his book on artificial intelligence called Architects of Intelligence. Now, prior to the break, we had a couple of great questions just kind of going through what is artificial intelligence, deep learning, how are they connected, stuff like that. But I want to get to the other side of it because we've had conversations on the show, and as much as I love the advancement in tech, I'm very worried about the security risks that come with this.
And part of the conversation usually goes, Jeff, we got to stay away from conspiracy theories. We got to be careful of that, because a lot of the mass media is driving toward fear-mongering in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So
I guess the question I want to know, and in coming up to this interview, I think it's the number one question I've wanted to ask, is what are the risks associated with AI, and particularly in the areas of security, privacy, bias, and potential weaponization?
Sounds like a great question for Martin, our guest, Martin Ford.
Right. So this is a very important question, and there definitely are some legitimate concerns there. And this is, you know, was again a really important topic in the book. So there's lots of material there on this. I will just, in the beginning, I want to just make the point that there are really two categories of these risks or dangers. And the first one is what you just mentioned, the things that we're going to face for sure, the things that we are already beginning to face in artificial intelligence. So these are very, very legitimate, fairly immediate concerns that we really need to be worried about. And then there's a second category of dangers that we might call science fiction still at this point, more speculative, futuristic things that many people consider to be, you know, potentially existential. But that's a separate category. So let me focus first on the immediate things, the things that we really legitimately have to worry about. And certainly one of those is security. The reality is that when we have an autonomous system, something that is controlled completely by artificial intelligence, and there are no people in the loop, then it's natural to assume that that system is going to be more susceptible to hacking or to cyber attack.
Sure.
Right. Someone else could take control of that system or cause it to stop working. Just to give one example, imagine that we had autonomous trucks driving around delivering all our food to stores, to grocery stores, and someone hacked into that and brought all those trucks to a stop. I mean, that's a pretty big problem, right? And you can imagine many, many things like that. So the whole issue of security with these systems is a huge issue, and there's lots of effort being put into that. And it's going to be a huge challenge. It may be the single most important challenge with regard to artificial intelligence and automation more generally is the security issue. You know, the fact that we have to make sure that these systems, you know, are safe from intrusion, mm-hmm. whether it's from criminals or other countries or whatever.
And Martin, if I may ask, along that vein, whose responsibility is that? Are there regulations to demand companies that are manufacturing artificial intelligence to use a security by design principle?
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a need to be kind of an interaction between government and between industry there. Certainly there's a place for regulation. I don't think that government can do it all by itself. I mean, the reality is that with many of these issues, there's a place for regulation. It's also true that the government isn't by itself competent, right? The people that work in the government don't have the knowledge to do this. I mean, one basic reality is that people that work for the government make a lot less money than people in the private sector. So the very best people don't always work in the government, right? So in terms of technical expertise, it's not always there. So it's going to require cooperation between the companies that are doing this and the government. And hopefully there can be some reasonable standards there, you know, and the companies will understand that there probably does need to be regulation to ensure that these systems are safe, and they will work together with the government to make that happen in an appropriate way.
Okay. Now, I mean, along that vein of thinking, you also have the impact of AI as it relates to industries. And so with that challenge you write about in Rise of Robots is the potential impact on the job market and the economy. Do you think that all of this could cause a new kind of industrial revolution and completely transform the job market?
Yeah, I mean, that's my view. And as you say, that was the topic of my book, Rise of the Robots. And I talk a lot about that with everyone in Architects of Intelligence as well. There is something of a debate about that. You will find for sure economists that will tell you that this is all overblown, that there's nothing to worry about. And largely the reason they'll tell you there's nothing to worry about is that in the past, this issue has come up many times. People have worried about technological unemployment for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't really happened yet, right? So I personally believe that this time is different because now we've got artificial intelligence. We've got machines that are in a limited sense beginning to think, and that means that they are competing, you might say, with our core competence, right? The thing that really makes us unique as human beings is our ability to think, to learn, to adapt, to innovate, and machines are beginning to compete directly with this capability, and that's going to have a different impact in the future. That's my view. Most of the people, everyone that I talk to really in Architects of Intelligence believes that there's going to be a disruptive impact. Not everyone agrees there will be outright unemployment, but I mean, I think most people in the technology community believe in the potential for this big disruption. What we see so far, of course, is not unemployment. We've got a very low unemployment rate in the United States, but we do see, for example, stagnant wages, right, among most of the workforce. You know, they literally haven't gotten a raise really in decades, not after adjusting for inflation. So I think technology is already having a big impact in terms of pushing down wages for average people and making things much more unequal, so that all the gains from advancing technology are now going to the people at the top, right? Executives and investors and people like that are doing well, but average people are not. So I think this is already having a big impact, and I personally believe that over the next 10, 20 years, we're going to see an even bigger impact. And there is a real potential for unemployment. And that's an issue that is, you know, potentially huge for society, for the fabric of society, for stability of society, for political stability and so forth, not just in the U.S., but in countries across the world.
Right.
And it also has big economic implications, because in order to have a thriving economy, people have to have money to spend, right? You know, you need people that can buy what's being produced. Mm-hmm. Businesses need customers. And if people don't have jobs or if their incomes are very low, if things are so unequal that, that a few people are really capturing all the income, then you can't really have a vibrant economy. And I think that's going to be a real challenge for us. So that is my view, although, again, there is a big debate over it.
Okay. Now, I mean, with that thought, I mean, you've talked about how big business is going to be gaining from that. And I know I read an article earlier this week about I think it was a restaurant in Japan or China that had laid off all of its staff and got robots in and then fired them all essentially because they weren't working out. So with that kind of back and forth hustle of trying to get a sense of how to use AI, who really is going to be the big benefactor and who are going to be the big losers? Is it kind of the, you know, big man versus little man, or is it going to create a whole new realm of winners and losers, so to speak?
Well, it's going to, I mean, technology is going to have a gradual impact, right? It's not going to be a restaurant bringing in all robots overnight or something. It's going to be a restaurant gradually using more robots, and as a result of that, not needing quite as many people, and maybe letting some people go, and maybe not hiring so many people in the future, right? And you're going to see that in restaurants, you're going to see that in Amazon warehouses, and you're going to see it especially with white-collar jobs across the board. So this one really important thing to understand is that this is not just blue-collar workers, and it's certainly not just physical robots that are actually manipulating the world, right? It's a lot of this is just about software, and it's going to be a big impact on knowledge workers, the people that sit in front of a computer and do relatively routine things, you know, cranking out the same report again and again, or doing the same kind of quantitative analysis or manipulating data in some way. A lot of that is going to be susceptible to automation. And that's not, you know, low-skilled people, right? That's people that have college degrees.
Right.
So there's a big impact coming there. Now, in general, the losers are going to be people that do routine, repetitive, predictable things. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean unskilled people or people that don't have education. It's about the nature of the work. It might be the McDonald's worker flipping hamburgers, or it might be the college graduate who just does the same report every week, right? Those people could both be impacted. The people that are going to be the winners and will be relatively safe from this and maybe in a position to benefit from it are going to be the people that can work with the technology in a way that really adds value. And that will be people who are very creative, that generate new ideas. It will be people that have interpersonal skills and networks and can build sophisticated relationships with other people, you know, and things like that. And of course, it will also be people that own lots of capital, right? Because essentially what's happening here, the big picture, is that capital, which includes technology and machines and algorithms, is becoming more capable and displacing labor, right? So the people that own capital, which is a relatively few people, right, because, you know, capital ownership is very concentrated,
right?
Those people are going to do better and better, right, because they own the machines, basically. They own the robots, you might say. Whereas the people that rely on their labor, if they don't have the specific skills to really work with these technologies and benefit from these technologies, those people are going to be losers. So that's the story that we're going to see in the future, I think. And it basically is saying that things are going to become even more unequal than they are now.
Right. Now, it's interesting that you talk about the people who have the capital are really kind of the ones that are going to benefit, because, you know, there have been some who have that capital that have spoken against it. And I mean, do we have to worry about the fears that have been raised by people like Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, and others, that someday AI could pose a genuine existential threat to humanity?
Right. So that's the second category of danger that I was talking about, right? There's something that still right now is really science fiction. And the concern there is that someday, first of all, we'll build a machine that has true human-level intelligence, right? Which, again, as I said before, you know, based on the people I talked to, could be 10 years away or could be 200 years away, right? So, and probably is something like 80 years at least away. So, you know, it's pretty far in the future. But if we reach that point, most people believe that, of course, things are not going to stop at that point, that the machine is going to get even smarter. That's just a natural expectation. In part, it might happen because the machine then decides to use its superior intellect to make even smarter versions of itself.
Right.
So pretty soon you have what's called superintelligence. You have something that is maybe much smarter than any human being, something dramatically smarter. Some people think it could be 1,000 times smarter than we are or something like that. So we might be like, you know, a mouse or an insect relative to the intellect of this machine, right? So at that point, the question then becomes, how do we control it? How do we make sure that it still works with our best interests in mind, right? Yeah. And this is what's called the control problem. And there are serious people really, really worried about this, working on this. The most famous of the people working on it is a guy named Nick Bostrom, who I also interviewed in the book. And he wrote a pretty famous book that was a bestseller called Superintelligence. And so I talked to him in the book. And he's concerned about this. He thinks it's a real genuine issue, that it potentially could be an existential threat. But obviously, that's very speculative. My own view on this is that it's good that some smart people like Nick Bostrom and a few other think tanks, Elon Musk set up a think tank called OpenAI, which is working on this problem. And I think that's great. There are some really, really smart people that are doing good work on this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of an appropriate allocation of resources to this problem, okay? Because it is very speculative. It does clearly lie far in the future. I don't think we should have this massive concern over this. I don't think we should have the government focused on this, spending big, you know, government funds or public funds on this. I don't think we want Donald Trump tweeting about this.
Right.
I think it's good where it is with a few smart people working on it. And I think that when you get rhetoric like you've seen from Elon Musk, where he's talking about, you know, summoning the demon and it's a bigger threat than nuclear weapons or North Korea and all this stuff, there's a risk that we become too engrossed in that and we distract attention from the things that we really need to be concerned about in the immediate future. And this is the issue you raised earlier, security, also the potential impact on privacy, the potential for bias. These are real issues that are already concerned. And also, as I've been talking about, the potential impact on the job market and on inequality. These are things that are coming at us within the next few years, certainly within the next 10, 20 years. Probably a lot sooner than that. So that's where most of our immediate attention should be. These other fears about an existential threat are legitimate. I wouldn't dismiss them and say it's stupid or silly, you shouldn't worry about it. But I think it's okay that a few smart people are worried about this and working on it for right now.
Right.
Okay. It sounds to me, through the course of this conversation, and Martin, please correct me if I'm wrong, but the people who are responsible for developing the artificial intelligence are aware of these potential problems. And admittedly, there are some potential issues with AI that are frightening. And they know about those, and they implement those into the development process. Is that fair to say?
And that's fair to say. And again, speaking in terms of the two general categories I laid out, right? Everyone that I talked to in the book is aware of the immediate concerns, the things like privacy and security and bias and so forth, and they are actively working on these things. They have different views about the further out, more futuristic existential threats. Some of them are quite dismissive of that. They really think that's not something we should worry about. Others do take that concern seriously.
Good.
But I think everyone agrees that it's okay if a few smart people work on it.
Right. Very good.
So, yes, I mean, we can have a reasonable level of confidence that the people working on these technologies care about it, right? That they certainly know about these dangers. And, you know, one danger we haven't talked so much about is weaponization, the idea that artificial intelligence could be used in autonomous weapons, right?
Sure.
That's not the same as the thing Elon Musk is worried about. That means, you know, drones that might autonomously kill somebody.
Yeah.
That's something that we have to worry about in relatively near future. And there are many people in the artificial intelligence community that are very, very concerned about this. For example, there are over 1,000 researchers that have signed a petition, you know, calling for a ban on these kinds of technologies because it could be, you know, very dangerous and disruptive.
Interesting. Now, we've kind of gone from the beginning of what is it and how does it relate to deep learning. We've gone to the...
We got into the dark side of AI.
Yeah.
Can we just bring it back a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
So for one final question, between all of your interviews, all of the research you've done, what are you personally most excited about when it comes to the evolution of AI?
I'm excited about the potential that the technology has to transform the world for the better. I mean, one of the best interviews in my book that I recommend everyone read is with Demis Hassabis, who is the CEO of DeepMind, right? This is maybe the most famous AI company in the world. It's the company that built the AlphaGo system that a lot of people heard about. It won at the game of Go. You can. There's actually a documentary called AlphaGo on Netflix that you can watch about this. I'd highly recommend it. What Demis says, he's really famous for this quote, is that he wants to solve the problem of artificial intelligence, and then he wants to use that to solve everything else. And that's really
interesting.
The potential of what we're talking about here.
Right.
So AI is going to become the most important tool in our toolbox. It's going to result in incredible breakthroughs in medicine and science. It can be used to address problems like climate change. It can be used to solve the problem of new clean energy sources,
right?
Maybe even, you know, global poverty. These are huge problems that humanity faces. AI is going to be the most important tool we have to solve these problems. Because if you think about it, everything that we have in our world today, everything that makes your life better than someone that lived 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago is because of human ingenuity, right?
Right.
And I think we've lost Martin there just for a moment. Martin, I'm gonna let that reconnect for your final thought.
Sorry, we
lost you there, Martin. Martin, can we just back up just about 10 seconds, please?
Sorry. Okay. So artificial intelligence is going to be the most important tool in our toolbox. It is going to enable us to create things in the future that today we can't even imagine. And that's the real promise of this technology. That's what gets me excited. And that's the reason that I talk about the challenges and the downsides of this technology, and in particular why I talk about the potential for inequality and unemployment and so forth. Because if we don't talk honestly about those problems and try to create solutions to those problems and try to create a way for this to evolve in a way that's inclusive, right, that benefits everyone, then there's going to be a backlash, right? People are going to object. They're going to, you know, people that are losing their livelihoods,
sure,
that are falling behind, they're going to be against this technology. And that's a bad thing because it's an incredible benefit for humanity. We don't want that. We want to find a way to adapt to this so that we can leverage this technology on behalf of everyone. And that's really my primary message in really everything that I do and in terms of all the writing that I've done in this area.
We've been speaking with New York Times bestselling author Martin Ford, and he is the author of Architects of Intelligence, brand new, just came out, and it's available everywhere right now. You can also support us if you'd like. Use the links that we've posted below, and that will allow you to purchase through Amazon as well. Martin, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.